Blog Talk Radio.
I'm just so broke you won't believe. Can't get a dollar out of me. And as far as I can see, I'm losing control like a bad disease. No, I just can't get relief. I've been shot down by the life police. Now every day I try to rise, but I can't succeed. Can anybody find a cure for me? You can be bitter, bitter, bitter. Or you can be better, better, better. Great life gives you lemon. Instead of champagne. Now every day is like a brand new year. I throw my hands up in the air like I just don't care. I'm moonwalking down the street feeling like, oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, at the bottom of the gas now, I feel clear. So now I laugh just a little more. I'm getting much taller than I did before. I know I'm not where I need to be, but I thank God that I'm not where I used to be. I used to be bitter, bitter, bitter. But now I feel better, better, better. Great life gives you lemon. Instead of champagne. I would say for a reason that I can't explain. Got something new to believe in. I'm awakened again. How many miracles I have in each day. If I can just get out of my own way. Well, life gives you lemon. Instead of champagne.
I'm a man of many talents. I'm more talented than Alex Boyer. More people ask for my autograph than for him. They're not going to tell you that. That little, like, rap part, where we're like, no, 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 lemonade, so dumb. It's already been done, like, a billion times. But luckily I was in the shot, because I saved it. Redemption. You're welcome, Alex.
Good evening, everyone. That was Alex Boyer, Lemonade song. And if life gives you lemons, make a martini show. It's a show for the tame and the untamed. It's serious with a dash of humor. Life is what you make it. You may be rich but unhappy or broke and happy. You may have had many adversities in your life. How many pity parties did you have? Ever went from being a victim to becoming victorious? Ever been down so low you could swing your legs on a dime? Do you have a sense of humor? Ever laughed at yourself? What is your overall view of life? Want to vent or just have something to get off your chest? If you answer yes to one of these questions, this show is for you. On my show, you get free exposure. If you're a business owner, starting a business, author, expert, or just want to share important information, I invite you to come on as a guest and let's chop it up. Sorry, there will be no discussion religion or politics. And if you're interested in being a co-host or guest, email me at gjdelicious37@gmail.com. Again, that's gjdelicious37@gmail.com. And I am your host, Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. And this evening, I have a very special guest. She was born and raised as Angela Hurt, growing up in a small, poor community town of Big Island, Virginia. The middle child of three siblings born to Charles Hurt and Bernice Babb. Oldest brother Charles Butch Hurt, baby brother Michael Hurt. Coming from a broken home filled with domestic violence, drinking, and heartache, life wasn't simple nor pleasant for my present guest. Without further ado, I'm going to bring our guest on so we can get right into the topic and share her life from being a victim to becoming victorious and doing speeches in colleges and just, you know, getting on with her life after being in a very violent domestic relationship. Good evening, Angela. Are you there?
Good evening. I am here today. Thank you.
Okay, I want to know, your name, your birth name is Angela Hurt. That's a little ironic, isn't it? But you go by Lynette Singleton.
Lynette Singleton,
How did that come about?
The name just came about on Facebook because, one, I don't like to use my personal name on Facebook, but also because just through the endurance and everything, I never still going by Angela Barksdale at the time and did not want to go by that name of the monster that assaulted me. So I started going by my middle name, which is Lynette, and just to the point where I was single again, so I chose Singleton, so I go by Lynette Singleton now.
Oh, okay, so Hurt was your...
Hurt is my name, born and raised. Mm-hmm. It is
okay.
my actual name, but it's just for Facebook only, and for social media, I just go by Lynette Singleton.
Okay. All right, so let's get into first of all, you have two brothers, right? Are your
yes,
parents
I do.
Still
mm-hmm.
living?
They are still living. We are very spaced out at this time. My mother and baby brother are living in North Carolina. My oldest brother, Butch, is living in Tennessee, and my dad and I are living here in Virginia.
Okay. So there is a separation there.
Right.
Do you have children as well?
Yes. I have three beautiful children from my first marriage, Alicia, Leanne, Bass, who just recently got married in June of this year. She also attends Columbus State College and will be expecting her first child in May of next year. I have a son, Anthony, the second. He is also a student at Columbus State University and pursuing his dream in accounting. And I have a 12-year-old daughter that attends middle school here in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Okay. So when you first became a victim of domestic violence, when did you realize it, and what were the symptoms and the repercussions that you were going through?
I was first introduced to domestic violence as a child, seeing my mother and father fighting, always having different altercations, whether they were physical, whether they were verbal and emotional. But during my third marriage is where the domestic violence truly became real, realization to me. I met a guy at the local Buffalo Wild Wings, and named Kevin Barksdale, and we talked the whole night, and he wooed me over. He, I thought, was to soon be my soulmate, my king, my every time out affection, and just this just wonderful individual. I ended up marrying him. But the day that I married him was the day that my life changed dramatically. He began to tell me that, oh, you can't wear these clothes and you can't wear these shoes. And he would start taking clothes out of the closet. And this is too form-fitting. This is showing too much of this and this is showing too much of that, to the point where I was only allowed to wear oversized shirts, pants, and sweatpants. I no longer looked like the female that I was, the businesswoman that I was. I became depressed because it was a mind game for him. Mm-hmm. And I guess he knew that I was so desperate and I was looking for love in all the wrong places that he manipulated my mind, making me think that he was the only one that even cared about me, to the point where he didn't even want me going to my dad's house unless I was with him. So I stopped going to my dad's house. I stopped visiting friends. I stopped hanging out. I stopped doing everything just so I could be with this man. Became so violent over the course to where one night I had decided that I wanted to go out with a friend just to celebrate that her son had graduated from Millermont and with his LPN license. And I went to the TGI Fridays with him, and as I went to the Fridays with him, he had
Hello? I'm sorry, we lost our caller. We're going to give her a few minutes to come back on the line. But stick and stay, because this young lady has really been through the mill, as I'm quite sure there are some young ladies out there or men who can identify with her story. I myself was in a domestic violence relationship for years and came out victorious. So, you know, if you're a victim or a survivor, feel free to call in with your comments and questions, and, you know, we can get this show going. So we're going to give our caller a few minutes to call back in because the call was dropped somehow. But in the meantime, we're going to listen to a song. And like I said, we're going to wait for our caller to call back in. So get your lemon drink or whatever drink you're drinking this evening. Sit back, relax. I got you.
My life to you. the shower. Once again, I'm heading home, but I'm satisfied to the bone. Like so many times before, you had me begging for more. Now I'm running home to her, when I prefer. She's got paper on me. How long can this go on? Pretending to love someone who just don't turn me on. And every time I taste your sweet, sweet lips, I make up my mind to abandon the ship. Man, oh man, she's cramping my style. I look in her face and see your sweet smile, but she's got paper on me. She's got paper on me.
You hear me? I paid the house note. be. And right now I'm in no mood to be number two. That's right, I got favor on you. And you do understand, my dear, that you must pay me to be free. That's what I said. You're going to pay me for my years and my tears and all my wasted years. And I know being with me hurts you. And I mean, you don't dig me anymore, but I'm hurting too. And you can tell that Disney broad, you know, the one you singing about, the miss sweet little thing that's always on your mind, that I'm not letting you out of this unless you buy me out. I'm not going through no more hard times or bad times, because I can do bad all by myself. All by myself. Yeah, I got papers on you. But now I'm throwing them in the trash can of my memory. Now take your little albums and your little raggedy components there that never work, and you can skank. You hear me? Just use my life up, use my body up, use all my time up. Boy, I don't know what to say about you. Oh,
Oh, sorry about that. That was Betty Wright, Your Husband Is Cheating on Us. Before that, She's Got Papers on Me with Betty Wright and Dimples. And I can't remember for the life of me the first song that I played. Anyway, hope you guys liked them. Getting back to the situation, my guess, I guess she had an emergency or whatever, I don't know, but I don't think that she'll be back on tonight, so I'm just going to speak a little bit about domestic violence, the signs, and, you know, how to, hold on, oh no, goodness.
Hello?
Yeah, hold on. I'm just sitting here talking, and then all of a sudden, I don't know what happened.
Well, you can call back too, because I don't know you.
If I ain't got nothing, I got you.
Yes. Okay.
If I ain't got something, I don't give a damn, 'cause I got it with you. I don't know much about algebra, but I know 1 + 1 = 2, and it's me and you. That's all we'll have when the world is through, 'cause baby, we
cut Beyonce a little short this evening. Sorry about that, but that was Beyonce 1 + 1. All right, hello, are you there? Hello?
Can you hear me, Gail?
Yes, I can hear you, dear.
Okay. I don't know how we got disconnected. I do apologize for that.
Right, I was about to close the show because I didn't know what had happened. I thought maybe you had an emergency or whatever, so I just went to commercial break, and then you called in. So where did we leave off? I think you were explaining that how he had isolated you and, you know, telling you how to dress and what you should and shouldn't wear. And
yes,
you know,
he began just constantly, it was always an issue with everything. I couldn't go anywhere by myself or do anything by myself. So he would in turn take and, if I wanted to go to my dad's, he would go with me or anything. Like I said, I couldn't go anywhere by myself. So, but it was one afternoon, I remember we were arguing, and my friend had called me. Her son had graduated with his LPN license at the Millermont Technical College and asked me to come out for a drink with them just to celebrate. And I agreed that I would come out there with them. And as I got there, we had just ordered our drink. And he called me and he said, where are you at? And I said, I'm at
TGI Fridays. I'm on Timberlake Road in Lynchburg, Virginia. And he said, okay. He says, I'm on my way out there. I said, okay, that's fine. Come on. And I remember as he walked into the door, the look in his eyes, he was just cold as ice. And he said, come on, let's go. And I said, I'm not ready to go. And he said, well, how much is your drink? I said, we just got our drink. I said, I don't have a tab or anything. He said, well, come outside and talk to me, because I was, like, I kept telling him I wasn't leaving with him. So I remember sliding my purse over to my friend at least the bar. And I told her, I said, I'm going to go right outside the door and I'm going to speak to him. And if you don't see me in front of the door, come outside. She says, okay. So I remember walking outside. And he says, come on, you're leaving. I said, I'm not leaving with you. And I walked back inside, and he grabbed me by my hand. And as he grabbed me by my hand, the next thing I knew, I was waking up to a police officer asking me, ma'am, are you okay? And I was being told that he had knocked me out. He had hit me, and he knocked me onto the ground. And where the handicap markers are, you have the little concrete slab to stop the car. My back of my head had hit that. So it knocked me completely unconscious. And he ended up stomping me with his Nike boots. I ended up having his Nike footprint on my forehead. I had black eyes. He had broken my teeth. He had broken my right wrist at the time, and I was taken to the hospital. He was taken to jail. There was two gentlemen that had got out the car and stopped him from stomping on me. And to this day, I don't know who those two individuals were, but they were my angels that night because they stopped him from beating on me. My friend,
was that the first time that he had put his hands on you?
That was the very first time he had ever put his hands on me. Before then, prior to then, everything was verbally. It was verbally abusive. It was, oh, don't nobody want you. Look at you. You're gain weight. And, you know, but at the same time, he was telling me, you don't have to worry about this. I'm the one that loves you. I mean, he just manipulated my mind to believing that he was the only one that truly loved me. And all this had happened, and I went to the hospital, and I got out, and his mother ended up about a week later coming to the house. She finally saw me and saw, you know, she still saw some of the bruises that were going away and saw my arm in the cast and everything. And she sat down with me, and it was the first time that me and her truly sat down and actually talked. And at that time, that's when she started telling me that Kevin had multiple mental disorders, from bipolar to schizophrenia and just multiple personalities and everything. And I'm looking at her, and I'm like, why wouldn't you tell me he was sick? You know, but I was like, okay, this is my husband. I vowed for better, for worse. So at that time, I went ahead and I said, okay. I said, I'm going to make this work with my husband. If you get the treatment that you need, if you go and get treatment and everything, I will help you. I will stay with you. And he went and he got treatment and everything. And he started on his medication and everything else. And everything was fine until the court proceedings stopped. At that time, once we went to court, he was ordered to do 21 days of work release, where he got out at 5:00 in the morning and then go back to jail until 7:00 at night. So he was still doing his daily routine. The only thing that stopped was where he laid his head.
Right.
You know, 21 days of this. But as he got out of jail, and I told him, I said, I'm not ready to stay at home with you by myself. I'm still, you know, kind of on the iffy side. So we ended up moving in with his mom. And his mom was a Jehovah's Witness. So we weren't allowed to celebrate holidays there. And I remember my daughter at the time, me and my daughter celebrated Christmas in my car. This was 2013. We celebrated Christmas in my car. I had to get up early in the morning and warm my car up and wrap my daughter up just so I could give her her Christmas presents in my car, because his mother did not celebrate holidays. Me and my daughter, we endured so much going through with everything. It just got to the point where I said I won't take no more. I wasn't gonna live like this after seeing my daughter having to celebrate her Christmas inside of a car. I went and I got a storage unit, and I started taking mine and my daughter's belongings slowly out the house, things that I knew that he wouldn't recognize that would be gone. I started putting them in the storage unit, went to the Goodwill, and I went to local stores getting things that I knew that me and her needed for our apartment. I was able to secure us a place to live, and the day that I finally decided that I was moving completely out, I asked one of my friends to help me move, and she brought along three other people to help with moving. And when she brought those other people to help move, I didn't really know them very well, but I knew that I needed to get out of that house, and I didn't have anyone else to depend on. Turned around, and I went, and we went to the house. We got everything with the U-Haul and everything, and lo, to my surprise, two of the individuals that was helping to get my things out of the home stole items, not just from me, but also from him, from Kevin. Kevin contacted me later on that night about items that were stolen. I was like, I didn't take anything from your home. I said, the only thing I took out of that house was what I bought and what I paid for. And he started naming all things that were stolen out of the house. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, I called these people, and they said that they didn't steal nothing, but I knew where they lived at. So I agreed to meet up with Kevin, and we went to one guy's house, and some of the items were there. Some of the items were in the home, and we were able to get some of the things out. Mm-hmm. But I was in so much fear of him. He was like, you're coming back home, you're doing this and that. You caused them to steal from me. He's like, you're going to pay for this and everything. And I'm petrified, and I'm trying to explain to him I didn't steal anything from him. I didn't do anything. But being so afraid of him, I allowed him to move in back in with me. So I was back in that cycle yet again, because I'm trying to prove to him that I didn't steal anything.
Right.
So he ended up moving in with me. And on July the 4th of 2015, Kevin woke up that morning, and he said to me, he says, I'm going to jail today. I said, what do you mean? So why are you saying something like that? I said, knock on wood, don't be saying nothing like that. He said, no, I'm going to jail today. And he took a shot of liquor. And that day we ended up going to the country, and I took some of my items that I had, extra items, down to my dad's house that day. And we went to a cousin's house, and, you know, we were on our way back home, and he looked over at me. He said, you're going to die today. And I looked at him. I said, what? He says, you're going to die today. He said, you allowed them to steal from me. He says, so that means you stole from me. He said, items that I can't get back, he says, I'm going to take back from you because you allowed them to steal from me. I'm telling him, Kevin, I didn't steal anything from you. I said, I just wanted out of this marriage. And I told him why I wanted out of the marriage, with the abuse and everything that was cycling through with him. And he says, and he ends up, he smacks me dead in my face, and he rips my glasses off my face, and throws them out the window. He says, bitch, you're going to die today. Excuse my language.
Mm.
And I remember crying. I remember trying to get to my cell phone so that I could call someone, and we struggled for the cell phone. And as we struggled for the cell phone, we ended up turning on Coffee Road in Boonesboro. And I remember having my purse wrapped around my wrist, and I was holding the handle on the door, and I was begging him, please just let me out the truck. Please just leave me alone. Just, I promise you, I won't, you know, call the police or anything. Just let me out the truck. Just please let me out. And he looks at me, and he says, you want out of this truck? I'm going to let you out this truck. And he pushes me out the truck because my hand was already on the handle of the truck door. So the truck door was kind of open just a little bit. All you had to do was push it. It would open. And he pushes me dead out that truck, and I hit the concrete, and I rolled and I rolled and I rolled to stop. And I just remember my body was just on fire at the time. And I looked up, and I could see him turning the truck around. And as he was turning the truck around, it took everything in my body and start running. I ran to the nearest house, and it was a husband and wife. I rang the doorbell, and they came out. I was hiding behind the bushes, and I told them what was going on. And we saw him. He was circling around like he was looking for me. He pulled into one driveway. We saw him pulling in the driveway. She said, "We're going to take you in the house, and we're going to lock these doors till the police get here." And they were calling the police. I remember them taking me into a room. The room was white. All I can remember was white furniture, white rug, white everything. Everything was just white. And here I am, and I'm bleeding. And I'm telling them, "I'm so sorry. I don't want to get anything on your furniture. I'm so sorry. I'm bleeding. This blood's just dripping everywhere." And they're telling me, "Don't even worry about it. Your safety is what we're concerned about right now."
Mm-hmm.
The police ended up coming, and they ended up taking pictures of me at the scene of the incident. And as they were taking pictures of me at the incident, they said, "We just got a call from him." And he went down the road to another store, passing one, two, maybe three stores before he got to the fourth store.
Mm-hmm.
And he called them, and he told the police that me and him had been arguing, and I had jumped out of the truck, and he feared for my life. He was scared to go back because he didn't know if he would find me dead or alive. And I looked over at the officer, and she sat there, and he told me that. And she stood there, and they took me to the they took me on to the hospital. At the hospital, we turned around, At the hospital, they diagnosed me. My whole left side of my body was filled with road rash, and my left wrist was broken at that time. My pinky finger was broken. It was over 15 different injuries that I had suffered that night because of him. He was arrested out at the store in which he called from because he advised them where he was at. They told him they was going to come out and talk to him, but he was arrested on the scene where he was at. He was not issued a bond at all. We ended up going to court. When we went to court, the judge sat there and he told him, he said, "Mr. Barksdale, you came before my court once before." And Ms. Barksdale sat here and she asked the court to give leniency on you. Is that the only leniency, only way you could award her was to sit here and throw her out of the truck. He says the normal guidelines are 2.5 years, what you've done. But he says, "I'm going to give you 5 years and I'm going to spend 2.5 years. Kevin ended up serving 2 years and 1 month. On August 24th of this year, he was released from jail. I do have a protective order that is in place. However, what people don't understand is when you get a protective order, they tell you that a protective order is permanent in the state of Virginia. But in the state of Virginia, with it being Commonwealth, it is not a permanent protective order. The protective order is only good for 2 years. If you do not renew your protective order within that 2-year time frame, it will be, you know, it would expire. You won't have anything else to do. But
and then a protective order is a false sense of security, because what is a piece of paper going to keep a person from doing something to you that they want to do to you anyway? So therefore, I don't understand, you know, what a piece of paper is going to do to protect somebody. You know, a person who is abusive and treats another person less than a human need to be put away like the animal that they're acting like, you know. Yeah. So, therefore, he should have gotten more time than two years and a month for throwing you out of a truck, breaking, you know, bones in your body, you know, making you go through the stress and all the things that he inflicted on you, and all he got was 2 years and a month. That's ridiculous.
Yes, ma'am, it is. Even with that, you know, for so long, like, I had so much anger and resentment that he turned my heart cold after enduring so much. And just recently, within the last few months, I linked back up with Sharon Clark, who is the victim witness director of Lynchburg. And she introduced me and asked me, would you mind just telling your story? And I looked at her and I was like, well, I don't know if I'm ready to tell my story, but, you know, if it's going to help somebody else, I'd be happy to do it. And I ended up going over to Liberty University where I was in.
Hello? Oh. Well, we've lost Angela again, so hopefully she'll call back. But in the meantime, we're going to go to commercial break. But, you know, just like I had mentioned, all the things that she went through, and they only gave this guy 2 years and a month, he should still be in jail. Because when you take somebody's self-worth into your hands and do whatever you want to do with it, you know, smashing it, making them have low self-esteem, and going through these changes that are unnecessary, that you're not going to go through because you have the power, and you're exerting that power over this person, taking advantage of them, then I think that a person who do things like that should be punished harshly for them, because the person that you did it to still has to go through the mental stages of getting over it, the heartache, the pain, and all the anguish that goes with being in those domestic violent relationships. And as I had mentioned before, Angela came back, I had been in a domestic violent relationship myself for years. And people always say, well, you know, why didn't you leave, or, you know, try to make it seem like it's your fault that these things are happening to you. But what you have to realize, if a person is loving or in love with someone, or if someone has beat you down so low, taken all your self-esteem and caused you to feel that they're the person who truly and really care for you, like they tell your family don't love you, this person don't love you, I really love you, and you want to be loved so bad until you accept this abuser's little gestures and little things that he's telling you. And the next thing you know, you're in an abusive relationship all over again if you were about to get out of it, because sometimes when you tell this person you're going to leave, they'll do all kind of things to manipulate you back, telling you they're going to kill themselves, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. And you go right back to them, you know, that's a little bit of abuse to yourself, but because of the fact that your mind has been altered to the point of not being able to concentrate or think rationally, so you go through these changes with these abusers. And sometimes women stay because sometimes a woman may be uneducated to the point where she knows that this person has been taking care of her all these years, and she feels she'll never can get a job because she never worked before, or she has too many children. You know, there's always a lot of reasons and excuses when women stay in these relationships, but domestic violence is not an option. There are so many outreach programs and people out there that will help people who are in domestic violent relationships, and tell, all you have to do is reach out. You have to take that first step. You have to look in the mirror at yourself and tell yourself, number one, that you love yourself, and number two, you're not going to go through it anymore. So what you have to do is make a plan. If you want to get away from this person while they're at work, leave while they're at work, or if they're asleep, or whatever it takes for you to get away from this person, then you have to do that. Because sometimes women who are in domestic violent relationships don't make it out. You know, and they're the ones who didn't do any planning, or may have done planning, and it just went the wrong way. Maybe the accuser found out. But there are red flags that go up. We have our female intuition. God gave that to us. When a little voice is telling you something's not right, trust that little voice, because that little voice is telling you that something's not right. You need to listen to it. When those red flags go up, if he's isolating you, telling you, you know, I don't want you being with this person, that person, don't wear this, don't do that, that's a red flag. Especially if before y'all got into the relationship, everything was, before you got deep into it, everything was good, he was letting you do this, and all of a sudden he's cutting everything out of your life, cutting your friends out, cutting what you wear out, cutting how you dress, how you look, you know, where you go, things like that. Those are red flags, ladies. Adhere to them. Adhere to them. And get out before it gets too bad. Because sometimes you can get out before it gets bad, you know, but then sometimes you keep hanging in there and not paying attention to the signs, it can get worse and worse and worse. And it will get worse. It's not going to get any better. Because an abuser is an abuser. And all they want is that control. So once they get that control and they know they have you under control, that's all it takes. And once they lose that control, they're going to lose their mind and either kill you or do something to you that's going to be satisfying to them. But whenever those signs appear, those red flags, pay attention to them. And also use your female intuition. If something's telling you something's wrong, it's wrong. With that being said, we're going to take a break, and hopefully Angela will call back in. And if she doesn't, then I guess we will be closing the show.
This is what I believe. I met you.
guest back is back, so we're going to cut Al Green short. That was Al Green, Love is Beautiful Anyway, so we're going to just cut that short. All right, Angela, you're back.
Apologize once again for that interruption.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we were talking about how he had did a year and, I mean, was it two years and one month,
yeah.
Yeah, for all the things that he had did to you. And, I, you know, like I had expressed, I think that's ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
And we also
their
harsher about
sentences. Yes, I'm sorry.
We were also speaking about the retainer that you had on him. You know, excuse me, that gives
a woman order.
A false sense. Yeah, the protective order that gives women false self a protection, and there's no protection in a piece of paper. You know.
Exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, a lot of women think, I'm going to get a protective order on you. You're going to leave me alone. No, 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 no. Don't set yourself up. Now, it's good to have it. But, you know, when it comes to actually protecting someone, no, a piece of paper is not going to do it.
And that is not. The only thing that's going to protect you is if you have a plan in force. If you have that other protection and precautions that you need. I personally, I went out and I've taken classes on, you know, gun classes as well as having a concealed weapon permit. People that have been involved in domestic violence, an actual victim, they can request their concealment license and get a waiver of not having to do the class up front, but you can go ahead and file for your concealment license, in which they waive the timely into getting that, and that way you can file for an emergency concealment license.
Oh, okay. Is that only in the state of Virginia, or is that worldwide? Do you know?
I'm not sure if it's only in the state of Virginia. I was just aware of it back in June or July, I believe. Of last year is when they actually changed some of the laws here in the Commonwealth state, in which they would waive you from having to take the class in order to get the concealment license. But just being aware and letting people around you know what is going on. So if they can't contact you or anything like that, you have some other type of plan in force where someone can just check on you on a day-to-day basis or anything. Like where I live at right now, my landlord is aware of what's going on, and there is a trespassing order against him, so he's not permitted on the property or anything like that. And like you said, it is a false sense of hope, but it is also putting things in place so if something does happen, you know, they already see what's going on. But the point of it is that the laws, you get more time for selling drugs or stealing something from Walmart or embezzlement or something like that than you get for domestic violence.
Right.
A life should not
right.
be limited to only 2 years. The pain and
that
suffering, I have scars that will always remain on my body as of right now, you know, and pain that I have to endure, the two surgeries that I've had to go through on my back. I have a domestic violence tattoo that is located on my left shoulder, and it's a ribbon with a quote that says, "You never know how strong you are until being strong is the only choice you have," and it's dated 7/4/15. That was the day that he attempted to kill me. And I look at it as though this right here is my daily reminder that I can be strong and that I can endure. And I was able to walk away. I'm still living. I'm still telling my story. And nobody's telling my obituary, you know.
Right.
So I'm still here. It was meant for me to be that voice for someone that is suffering in silence. because domestic violence is a silent killer. A lot of people don't speak out on it because they're afraid of that spouse or afraid of that partner or person that's doing the abuse. They're afraid, and they don't know what's going to happen, or they don't have that support that they're needing to get away from. I didn't have that support. My father is housed. You know, he already has people living with him. My mother at the time, she had my baby staying with her. So it wasn't somewhere that I could just run to someone's house and I'm going to be all right. I didn't have that support system that I needed. But being able to have them.
Excuse me. So what you're saying is that your mother and father could not be there for you when you were going through these turbulent times with your husband?
Correct.
And that's kind of bad, too, when you don't have support, because we need support. You know, we need that support where we can run to someone or someone can cover for us or, you know, get us out of those situations. But when you don't have that support, no one that you can count on and no one you can call on, that makes it that much more scarier for you. You become that much more intimidated by this person. And, you know, that's why a lot of women just will stay in a relationship opposed to, you know, not feeling like they can get out of it, because there's always going to be a way out, but you just have to know when to make that move and how to make that move. And most women are so intimidated by their abuser until they don't even make the effort to do that.
Exactly. And, you know, I refuse to be one of the statistics where I'm no longer here. I'm no longer able to provide for my child or do for my child. You know, it had to come to that point where I was fed up, and not when everybody else was like, okay, get out of it. It's easy to say to get out of it when you're not the one that's in it. When you're the one that's in it and you're not working or you're not going, you're having to go through so much, because now I am a disabled mother. I've had two back surgeries, you know, and there's a possibility of having a third back surgery.
Wow.
And this is all from events that led from jump. You know, so we sit there and we look at people and we're quick to ask, well, why did you stay? Or, you know, why you keep going through all this and that? But what they don't understand, if you're not financially set to where you can move when you have a child, you can't just up and leave and go anywhere with a child. But I want to thank the Lynchburg Victim Witness Program, Sharon Clark, who is their director, Pam Cook, which she does a lot with the protective orders and also assists with other things. The two of them, along with Janelle Johnson, which is the Commonwealth attorney, that assisted me in that case. They were wonderful individuals. The state, the Commonwealth, has to go by grants and everything to some of these programs. And without having the grants to assist individuals that don't have the support, a lot of people will remain victims of domestic violence.
That's true. That is true. But, you know, there's so much help out here now opposed to years earlier, you know, because everybody wants to pitch in. It's really become an epidemic how men, significant others, husbands, boyfriends, and the likes are just killing their wives, burning them, scarring them, and doing all kind of crazy things to them and getting away with it. You know, that's the hurtful part right there, because they have to live with those scars for the rest of their life, and this other person has gone on with their life. And not only is the victim suffering, but family members, it affects everybody. You know, it affects your children, your mother, your brothers, your sisters. It affects everybody. And, you know, they need to realize that this isn't a thing that just goes away. It's not something that, you know, you can just say, okay, he did it, I forgot about it, it's over. It doesn't happen like that. It does not happen, because those scars are eternal. Even though sometimes they lie dormant and certain things can bring them up, but trust and believe, those scars are forever.
That is very true. There has been nights when this first occurred that my daughter, she would wake up in the middle of the night crying and screaming and telling me, "Mom, I had a bad dream that Kevin was coming to come back and he was going to kill you." You know, and I would have to sleep with her in my bed. And even now, sometimes she still gets in my bed because she's so overprotective. You know, I have, like, with her, like, if I go out and she's not with me, she's calling me just about every 20 minutes. "Mom, where you at? What you doing, Mom?" You know, she's more of a mother now than anything, but she's afraid. She's afraid, so I'm constantly having to tell her, "Mom's okay. I'm going to be all right, baby. You know, you don't have to worry about this." But this, he has, you know, has got out of jail. Her senses as well as my senses are heightened. They're, you know, we're both, you know, constantly watching our shoulders and everything. Nobody should have to live with having to look over their shoulders and worried if somebody's going to come back for them again, if something's going to happen to them, if he's going to try kidnap my child, or if he's going to try to come back and harm me. Is he going to break in my house because he knows where I live at? You know, these are constantly things that I think of on a day-to-day basis. You know, and no woman, no man, no child should have to live like that.
That is true. But the judicial system is so messed up. They're so behind in so many cases. And, you know, it's just horrible how we as women have to go through what we go through on the count of how the system is set up, you know, and how they let men get away with so much, you know, because in some countries it's okay for a man to beat his wife to death, stone her to death, gouge her eyes out, set her on fire. You know, that's ridiculous because, you know, I realize it's a man's world, but it wouldn't be nothing without a woman or a girl, nothing. So, therefore, we are the commodity that we should be cherished and loved and treated as the queens that we are, opposed to men who just treat us like slaves or their pets, their trophies, and, you know, the things that they want to treat us as besides human and, you know, like the queens we are, like I mentioned.
Exactly.
You know, it's really a sad, sad, sad situation that women have to go through what they go through in these domestic violent relationships. And women who have children, it's even worse because the children have to see these things and then they have their nightmares. They go through their trauma. And, you know, who knows, they may even grow up and be just like the abuser. You see what I'm saying? So, therefore, children suffer as well. And, they say hurt people, but sometimes you have to stop and think and say to yourself, I've been through that, so I don't want anybody else to go through that. You know, so instead of spreading hate, spread love, you know, and make people understand that you can be loved. You know, even an abuser, you know, may have been through something to cause them to be an abuser, but it's not necessary for them to stay an abuser because is help for them as well.
Right.
Everybody who is broken can be fixed. So
that is very true.
Yeah,
very
but some
true.
People
the
are
one
so
thing,
determined. Some people are so determined to stay broken, you know, until that's all they want to be that way.
Right.
You know, so you have to be very careful of the relationships you get in. You have to be very careful of the certain type of guys you be with, because number one, you never know a person until you live with them.
That is very true. That is a very true factual statement.
You hear me? When you live with the person, you learn that person. I experienced that. I was in an abusive relationship as far as with my sister. Because I had I had lost my home, and I went to stay with her and went through abuse living with her because she felt that because I was living with her that you know, it was things that she felt that I should do that I really didn't feel that I should have done. But I did them anyway, you know, on the strength of me having somewhere to stay. But it was an abusive, like, thing, staying with her in her house. And, you know, people don't realize that there's abuse can be from anybody, a spouse, mother, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, or whatever. But, you know, since we're on the subject of domestic violence, but, you know, just going through that abuse period can be so traumatic to one's body, mind, soul, and spirit. So
it definitely is.
And not to have the comfort of someone that understands and will listen to you and help you through your flight, you know, it's kind of bad too. And if you have someone who will listen to you and understands and, you know, will help you through your difficult times, your trauma and all these kind of things, that helps too.
Yes, it does, definitely.
You know,
if you have
that
support system.
Yes.
Yes,
you
definitely
need that support.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be
right
back, okay?
All right, thank you.
You're listening to If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show at
109.9
Blog Talk Radio, coming to you live from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hosted by Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. For questions or comments, the call-in number is 646-652-2877. That's 646-652-2877. And remember, if life gives you lemons, make a martini. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Listen up, I got to tell you about this beautiful author and publisher, Gail Delicious Johnson. Gail Delicious Johnson is proud to announce the publication of her new revised issue of her latest suspenseful novel, Back to Zero. Read this riveting story of intrigue, conflict, love, and suspense. Follow the trail of abuse, secrets, lies, and love. And check it out. You can't just read the back of the book, because you have to prepare yourself for the mind-blowing, explosive ending. Order your personally autographed copy of Back to Zero by visiting www.jjpublishing.com. That's www.jayjaypublishing.com.
Back to Zero is a fictional story with a dash of reality. It's a tale about Anthony Thomas, a man who lost the most precious things in his life, starting with his first childhood love, Gloria. Tragedy soon followed after losing his mom to cancer, and shortly thereafter, he lost his wife, Lynn, and son, Junior, in a horrific car crash.
Oh, yeah.
With each traumatic incident, Anthony was branded, back to zero. 30 years later, Anthony runs into Gloria, and the flames in their hearts are still burning. Gloria, now a law enforcement official who also comes with baggage, a psychotic husband named Wayne Anderson who is out of control. He too is a law enforcement official that's abusive, jealous, and an alcoholic. Wayne treats Gloria miserable. While snooping behind his wife, he finds out that she had research information concerning Anthony on the internet. Wayne goes into a rage of madness like a rabid dog because in his sick, twisted mind, he feels threatened and accuses Gloria of sleeping with Anthony. Often, he would evict her from the house, but not realizing the night would come when he forces his wife straight into the arms of Anthony. After spending an intense, earth-shattering night of lovemaking, Gloria opens up and confesses to Anthony that she still loves him. Rekindling their relationship is dangerous, and Wayne will stop at nothing to make his wife and her first love miserable hell while fighting his own demons. Wayne harbors a deep, dark, and deadly secret, one he thought he and only the devil knew. Find out what happens when Gloria uncovers the truth about her abusive, lawless husband's mysterious past. The devastation will bring the three of them together in an explosive confrontation. Find out the shocking secrets Wayne harbored and prepare yourself for who will pay the ultimate price for his lawless actions. Gail Delicious Johnson says, Back to Zero will take you where the law becomes the abuser. Order this fast-paced, action-packed field drama by best-selling author Gail Delicious Johnson from her web store at JJ Publishing. That's J-A-Y-J-A-Y Publishing.com. Remember, abuse is never an option.
Alrighty, we're back with our guest this evening, Angela Hurt, and we're discussing domestic violence is not an option. So where are you at today in your life? And if you had to, what advice would you give someone who went through or who is going through what you went through?
Stop. Don't stay silent. Domestic violence will drive you into a state of depression. It will take you to a world where you don't even know yourself. So what I do is I advise people to stand up, to be their own person, to sit there and tell what's going on. There's so many resources out here that can help you where you won't have to endure the pain and suffering any longer. You can contact your local agency, domestic violence shelters. There are victim witness programs that can help you to secure shelter, to help you to get out of your situations. There's counseling programs and other different resources out there. Don't suffer in silence. They may say they love you, but they don't love you. It's not love. It's not love.
No.
Stand up for yourself, especially for children. If you have children, you know, think about your children first then before you think about yourself and continue to stay in a relationship where you're constantly being beaten all the time.
Yep, that is so true. And the main thing is to not be silent about it. You know, let somebody know what's going on because...
Exactly.
Somebody might can save your life, opposed to you
yes.
thinking that, you know, it's okay. I know I'm doing the right thing, but, you know, you're not. Because if you're
exactly.
in that relationship and not getting out of it, at least not trying to get out of it, you're not doing the right thing. And there's so
exactly.
many things that you can do to get out of the relationship. So don't think, and don't think because some women feel they have to stay because of children. Some women think they have to stay because of finances. Some women think they have to stay because they have nowhere else to go. But, hey, isn't having your self-worth and your sanity so much more worth
yes.
than staying
yes.
with somebody who is abusing you? If you have to
yes.
sleep on the street, isn't it better than having somebody abusing you? You know, but that's not the case. You can go to a shelter, and they have things such as the House of Ruth and, you know, these different shelters that would accommodate these women and their children.
Exactly.
And so they can do better. So don't think that, you know, you're not going to have any places to go. If you can sleep in a cardboard box for a night, you know, it's better than
mm-hmm.
being abused verbally,
abused.
Mentally, physically, financially, sexually, and all the things that your abuser was doing to you. You know,
exactly.
peace of mind is so much
so,
better to have
yes, it is.
Than to have someone constantly treating you like the dirt on the bottom of their shoes.
That is very true. I think if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't know what true love is as of today. I mean, he showed me everything that I don't want in a relationship, but he also opened doors and introduced and I was able to be introduced to someone that does care about me and that does love me.
Mhm, mhm. And see, some women will not take that stand again because they've been so bruised up, so scarred up until they shut down and they figured that they don't want to be in a relationship anymore because they know that they don't trust men, they lose their trust, and some of them feel that they're
exactly.
not worth it because their self-esteem has been stripped from them. You know, so it's I congratulate you for getting back out there and finding, you know, true love because, you know, every woman deserves to have her king, just like every king deserves to have their queen. So,
yeah, definitely.
You know, women, if you're going through it, You know, don't be afraid to try love again, because there is somebody out there for you, but you have to be very, very careful in your selection of men. Do a background check. You know, ask their mother questions about them, ask their friends questions about them, you know, until you're satisfied. And if you're not satisfied with things you hear, then right then and there you need to get out of it, because
get out of it.
For instance, if you hear that he was locked up for child abuse, you don't want to get in a relationship with him, especially if you already have children, because 9 times out of 10, he may abuse your child.
You know what I'm saying?
So do a background check and be very cautious in your selection of men. Because, like I said, these men these days are, you know, some of them are just crazy. I'll just say it bluntly.
That is very true.
And they just want that power. You know, so give them that power, that's it.
Exactly. And as long as you continue to live in fear, or you're doing nothing but giving your abuser the power over you, once you get out of that domestic violence relationship, I admit, I was the first to say, I don't want love. I don't want nobody near me. I put up a wall that was thicker than a China wall, that I didn't want nobody around me, no man, no anything around me. But I had to let that go, because as long as I kept that wall up, I was still giving him the satisfaction of being in control of my life.
Once
I was finally to that point where I don't forgive him, I really don't. I forgive myself, because I should have known not to go back. But even still,
but
I will never forget
that.
What went.
Right, but to get to free yourself completely, you have to forgive him. But you don't have to forget, because you have to remember what happened, so it won't happen again. But you have to forgive him to get that relief off yourself, you know, and to satisfy your self-worth. Because when I was raped, I was raped when I was 15. I just forgave that guy when I was in my 50s, because I just tortured myself all those years going through the fact of seeing it, feeling it, smelling it all these years, just going through that rape over and over when something would trigger it, or seeing him, you know. So I just decided that I was going to forgive him, but it's something that I will never forget, how he did what he did to me. But I do feel so much better, because I don't have the nightmares that I used to have, and, you know, watching my back and all these old crazy things, because, you know, I just decided to go on and forgive him and get on with my life, because he definitely got on with his life. He's still doing the same things that he's always been doing, raping and whatever. But I've gotten on with my life, and that's it. So you have to forgive, you know, the person in order to free yourself.
And even with them forgiving, it takes time to forgive. I think with me, being able to speak on what happened to me and everything, it's allowing my heart to mend, being able to tell my story. Because I'm finally, instead of constantly living with it in silence and not speaking on it, I'm able to get it out.
Yeah,
and it's
it
not
out.
Being built up inside of me.
Right. Right. You have to get it out, because, like, when I got raped, 15, it was never spoken of with my family members. We never talked about it. I never received counseling, no type of help or anything. It wasn't until I had gotten grown, I think I was like in my 40s, when I actually started talking about it. And what had made me talk about it was because I found out that 3 of my girlfriends were actually raped by their biological fathers. So that's I began to talk about it, you know, because rape is rape, regardless of who's doing it to who or whatever. But I just don't know how I could handle the fact of my father, my brother, my cousin, or uncle, or someone touching me inappropriately in any kind of way. You know, so that's when I had opened up and started talking about what had happened to me. You know, but all those other years, I never spoke of it, just, you know, going through the trauma of it. But, you know, once I learned that from my three girlfriends. We talked about it. I even wrote a poem about it that I put in the back of my first book that I published. And it was dedicated to one of the girls who had told me that she was, one of my girlfriends was raped by her father when she was 14. Another one of my, well, two of them was raped when they was 14. And then another one of mine was raped when she was, I think she said she was between, from 6 to 9 years old. Her father was having oral sex with her.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think then he started penetrating her when she was a little older. But, you know, I just could not even imagine, I don't even want to think something that my father is deceased, but I wouldn't want my father to, my brother, cousin, uncle, no one to touch me inappropriately, a family member, let alone a stranger, because that's what I was raped by, a stranger. But just a family member seemed like would be something that would be more kind of a little harder to handle, you know, because if you're living with your father, you got to see him every day, or your cousin or uncle. You know, back in the day when a family member would do something like that to another, like to one of the children, it wasn't reported or anything. They just would tell the child, well, stay, don't go around Uncle so-and-so. Just stay away from him, you know. And, you know, but that didn't make the problem any better because that child still went through the mental anguish when they grew up and possibly turned out to be just like Uncle so-and-so. You see what I'm saying? So you know, it's just so important to forgive, like you said, even to forgive yourself, because I forgave myself for being so hard on me and you know, beating myself up, you know, for going through what I had went through, the domestic violence relationship, being raped, being molested, you know, sexual battery and all those things. I just had to forgive myself and the people who had violated me.
Right.
I am now free of that and, you know, getting on with my life because I know that they've gotten on with their life and it's only fair that I get on with my life, even though I was a victim. I went from being a victim to be victorious because
but that is definitely
I have to let other women know that, hey, it was not your fault. Don't let anybody tell you it's your fault. Don't accept the fact when they say it's your fault because it's not your fault.
Right,
you know.
Exactly. Exactly. And being free to...
Go on, dear.
Sorry. And being free, it just allows you to breathe just a little bit more easily. You know, you have a sense of peace, and you smile a little bit more, and your day just seems just a little bit more brighter. You're just happier in life. So once you actually be able to let it all go.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is the truth.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. So, you know, you women out there who are listening to this, hopefully you've taken something from it because Angela has displayed her story and, you know, it's very heartfelt that what she went through and her story could be your story. So, so do you have any closing remarks on how people can get in touch with you and, you know, when you'll be speaking? And
yes, people can feel free to contact me at Lynette Singleton on Facebook, or they can send me an email at angelahurt2017@gmail.com. A lot of the events in which I do speak for are through Sharon Clark at the Victim Witness Director Program, the Women's Coalition. I am now a member of the Women's Coalition in Lynchburg, Virginia, and the YWCA. So they can feel free to contact me. I'll try to assist them with whatever I can do. But our main thing is to go before the Senate and try to get these stricter and harsher laws for domestic violence.
Right. So what is your closing remark you'd like to leave people with, a thought, or would you like to say as your closing remarks?
My closing remarks, I'm going to go back to my quote, which is, you never know how strong you are until being strong is the only choice that you have. Your life is not an option. Don't allow a monster to destroy you, but pick yourself up, contact the resources that you need, and get out of the situation.
Yes, yes. Most importantly, get out of it before you can't get out of it, because I've
exactly.
known a few women who have lost their lives. Some women have been set on fire. I don't know if you remember the Yvette Cape story. That was a young lady who was set on fire in Maryland on her job. Her husband, her ex-husband, came to the job and set her on fire. Yeah, her story was even on the ID channel. But yeah, she's disfigured for life, and yeah, you know, they'll just do anything for revenge and to hurt you
exactly
even more, especially if you want out, because they don't want to let you go because of their low self-esteem. And because of what they've been through, they're just going to try to keep you right along with them. But you have to realize that you weren't meant to go through any type of the pain and anguish that they're trying to put you through.
Right. Exactly.
So,
exactly.
You know,
I'd like to also thank you for the opportunity allowing me to speak and to tell my story before your listeners and everything. It's like I said, a big healing process, not only for me, but if it just reaches one person to help them be able to say, hey, I'm fed up, I'm tired,
right.
I can't take
right.
anymore. So if it just reaches that one person to give them that mindset of, hey, I'm not going to do this anymore, you know, I've reached my goal, you know. But our main thing is right now is trying to get these laws implied, because your life should never be worth 2 years and 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
Your life should never come down to somebody saying, hey, okay, this is all he's going to get. But then they don't look at the scars that are behind it, the bruises that are behind it, the mental, emotional, the physical damage that has been done. So
right.
let's get out there and instead of having this being such a silent crime, but to get it out here and get these laws for women and for children, that's going to benefit them.
Right, no doubt. And I do, I second that emotion, because, you know, it's only the truth. And women always remember their abuse is never an option. Never.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So you don't have to take anybody's abuse, physical, mental, verbal, sexual, financial, any type of abuse. You do not have to take it. Always remember there is a way out, but you have to think, be diligent in what you're doing to get out and get out. You know,
exactly.
There's always someplace you're going to go, somebody's going to help you out, but you just have to you have to take that first step. Someone can help you with your other steps, but the first step
exactly.
is going to be on you. Once you do
that
people will flock you and people will assist you, but you have to take that first step.
That is
so
true.
So, Angela,
true.
I really, really, really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. And just to show my appreciation, I'm going to give you a great big round of applause.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
So,
thank you.
Yes, and also check out my website, my publishing website, because if you ever want to write a book, you know, we can do that. And because your story, just, you know, from you sending me that paper, Very, very, very interesting. I'm quite sure someone who may read about it will be enlightened about it as well, you know.
Yes.
So, you know, stay in touch
yes.
with that.
And, I most definitely will.
Yes. And like I said, it was a pleasure speaking with you. And I don't know, did I send your friend request on Facebook or not?
I'm
not
sure.
Okay,
great. I look forward to receiving it.
And
okay.
with that, you have a beautiful evening, darling. Like I said, thanks
Thank you.
Again for showing up.
Thank
All right,
you.
Remember,
you have a wonderful evening.
Okay. Remember, everybody, have a wonderful weekend. If you're drinking, don't drive. If you're driving, don't drink. I like talking to you, not about you. I like seeing you, not viewing you. With that being said, love you guys. Have a beautiful weekend. Good night. See you guys next week. Same time, same place. Thank you.
Thank
you. You just listened to the number one radio station on the internet, Delicious Talk Radio. Thank you and good night.